Blog Talk Radio.
Doing today. Hoping everybody is doing well and enjoying the time that we have together today. I hear the weather's been getting really kind of ridiculous lately out here. Our friends up in Maine were telling me they had more snow. I don't know. It's already March. I don't know what's going on here. So hopefully soon we'll be able to deal with the snow. I don't know what's going on. Mountain Man, where are you?
I am here.
It's so funny for a minute there. I'm like, am I talking to myself or what?
No, I actually stopped the music, so I don't know what glitches you're having over there.
I'm not. I just wanted to make sure that I had you on. I want to welcome everybody to our show tonight, and I'm really excited to have you. I'm broadcasting live from the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia. We are here. It's kind of raining out. We haven't gotten snow. It's really drizzly out, and it's been kind of bummy, but it's expected with spring. So I'm hoping that everybody is enjoying their night and that they're having a good time as they're here joining us. I have to tell you, and Mountain Man can attest to that, last week we really had a good time with Bill and Shelly, and we had Justin as well. But Bill, we decided to have him come back because he has a lot of really amazing stuff coming up. So we'll have him later on around 7:20-ish or so to come back on and to tell us a little bit more about the stuff that he's gotten involved with and that's going to be coming up. Mountain Man, what have you been up to?
Mountain Man is in the house, and I want to say a quick hello to everyone in our chat room. Betty, Bob, Infamous Angel, Mark, Mary,
Angel Girls in the building. Mark, how are you? Welcome
those
back.
Those are who I see in the chat room. And for those of us who are in our chat room, the co-host, the ordinary woman / co-host, is always going to be Chris / Mountain Man. So for those of us who are in our chat room, just so you know.
I hope so. It better always be you.
Well, when I said hello and asked, somebody had asked a question, and you know who you are who answered the question, and they thought I was you. So I just wanted to correct myself and or correct the person and say, the co-host is always me, Mr. Mountain
yes.
Man slash Chris. Or
that's right. Chris
versa.
Is our co-host. He's my co-pilot. He's always in the building making sure that everything's going well and making sure that I don't screw up the switchboard because I'm always, like, bleeping people out. And, if it wasn't for him, I don't think I'd ever get any of you guys on. Sierra 32, welcome to the chat room. It's so nice to have you. I'm so excited that all these people keep joining us and keep coming along. So I have to make sure I let everybody know before we get too far into the show. Remember, you can join us on blogtalkradio.com/ordinary woman. That takes you right to our segment page, and you can listen to our show from there. If not, you can actually listen to us on your smartphone as well if you have the Blog Talk Radio mobile app, or you can actually just go online on your browser and be able to listen to us that way as well. You can call in to our number, which is 1-347-989-1473, in case you have any comments, concerns, or questions for our guests. You can also call into that number if you're on the road and listen to our show that way as well, if you choose to. If you incur a cost, our toll-free number is 1-877-907-7217. So we hope you guys will call in and put Bill in the hot seat and ask him what he's been up to and some of the great projects he's going. Also, if you have any requests, comments, concerns for us, you can email us at ordinarywomanwmn@gmail.com as well. I have some questions that were asked in the last few weeks, so we're going to probably get to those as well. Andy, my man, is in the building. Yes, 14696. Thank you so much for stopping by. So, yes, I'm very excited to know that Bill's coming back. And before we get into it, Mountain Man, what have you been up to, my man?
Mountain Man's not feeling so hot lately. Mountain Man's been kind of feeling some pain. And,
we need to get you upgraded or something.
I don't know. But anyhow,
hey, the 6 million man
I'm
did
doing
it.
Okay.
You've new legs, new
I'm
body,
okay,
new thing. You know, get you going.
Thing.
You know, we got to get you renewed, up and going, see what we can do with you, help you out. I have to say that one of the things that we've done in the last month or so is we have our Hodgepodge Thursday, which will be next week. We haven't had it this month. But one of the things that we have been doing is I've kind of been coming up with what I call a hot topic of the moment, just open it up to discussion. And I have to tell you, I was kind of thinking twice about which way I was going to go with it. But, you know, it's funny. My son had some guests for dinner, and I figured this would be the perfect topic of conversation to bring up. And one of the things that has been coming up is, you know, we'd be hearing in the news what they're doing in Wisconsin with the unions and all that. And, again, I'm not picking sides yet, just talking about a point. But one of the things that keeps coming up is we talked about this before, and one of the things that keeps coming up is the rights of veterans. And we talked about this about a month ago, about the fact that all these injured veterans that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and Bosnia and all these other places. But my whole challenge is that lately people don't realize with the way the economy is, the cutbacks that have been happening everywhere, except if you're an elected official, you still get your raise. But there have been severe cutbacks to the point that a lot of veterans are actually being put on hold when they apply for benefits after they've come back from war with injuries. So that I'm kind of want to open up that up to discussion because I don't know, Mountain Man, what do you feel about that? Doesn't that just seem like kind of like just not really a fair thing to do?
I plead the fifth. And the reason why I say that is because I hear what you're saying.
It's not even a knowledge base. It's the fact that if you're a veteran and you serve your country and you come back, I mean, you're not allowed to. I mean, you are basically made through jump through hoops. And people think that it's the same as if you applied for welfare or if you applied for Social Security disability or, you know, SSI. It's not. The paperwork that is involved.
Let me say this. I have heard too much because I haven't really watched too much of the news lately. but I did hear something in the last 24 hours of what you just said.
Right.
Okay. I don't know how
let
long
me have
it's been
it.
In
what
the
you,
news.
Let me have it. What have you heard? What do you think?
I have heard something about something out in Wisconsin about unions and whatever have you and something not being fair, whatever. Okay.
Right.
I didn't catch the whole thing.
Right.
I was not sure what was going on. And when it comes to news, I basically tried to catch the weather part of it. And then once the weather comes for that time frame, then I just end up shutting it off.
Well, I hear you on that because I happen to think that the news is just so freaking negative because we as humans just love the dead bodies and the carnage and, you know, it's just we're morbid that way. That's what sells newspapers. That's what gets people to look at the news and listen to them on the radio. But even that aside, it's the fact that people don't realize that. They think, okay, here are our soldiers going into combat where they're being told to go into combat by whoever their CEO happens, I mean, their commanding officer happens to be. And the commanding officer doesn't make the decision. It's coming down from, you know, the Pentagon and the White House. So they wind up going, they do their duty. Now they're hurt or they're injured or something happens and they come back. And my thing that I'm putting out there is they don't have a problem shipping us out. When those orders come, if I say, I don't want to go, I'm going to go in jail. And I'm going to wind up in jail because I'm a deserter now. I absolutely just went against everything that I said I was going to do when I signed up. But then when the shoe's on the other foot and I've been hurt or injured and I've earned my right fighting in some godforsaken hole for the freedoms of people in this country, some of them unfortunately don't even appreciate it. Now all of a sudden the government's telling me, you know, remember all that stuff we said about we'd take care of you if you did your duty and that? Well, you know, you're going to have to wait. Where is the fairness in that? I didn't say to them, you have to wait till I'm good and ready to go to XY place that you're sending me, or I'm going to wait till my paycheck comes, because I know personally some of my buddies that were in the MP 82nd company, they literally went without paycheck for 6 months because they were technically no longer soldiers because their enlistment time had been up. And they re-upped them for 6 months with no paperwork signed, no nothing. So these men and women were in limbo for 6 months, which means God help the people that had casualties or something happened because technically they were there as civilians. And now all of a sudden they have no say in that. It's not like they can say, well, you know what, I don't want to stay. Put me on a plane and I'm going back. Not happening. You're with your unit. You stay with your unit until they decide to call them back. So my whole thing is that I really am having a hard issue understanding how we as Americans have become so desensitized to things. You know what I mean? Because the fact is that, you know, you yourself have said it. It's like, okay, I don't watch the news. I'm not. And it's not even that what I'm talking about. It's the fact that we no longer ask questions. I remember when I was a young kid asking my sister.
The reason why I'm not asking questions about it and saying much about it is because, hey, you're right, Charlie. I don't watch the news that often because you're right. It is a lot of the negativity. And besides that, to me, it just doesn't matter to me. It does matter to me when somebody, a close friend of mine, gets hurt or whatever. Yes, I understand that. Okay,
right.
I want to see the news about that piece. Or if I know something that is exciting. Like, for instance, okay, this yesterday, okay, not to jump off subject here and not to try to, but the Space Shuttle Discovery came home Wednesday morning. And it landed at like 11:50 something Eastern Standard Time.
My point right there. You will have more people interested in a shuttle landing than the fact that there are American citizens in this country starving. because they're not getting benefits that they have earned. And I'm not talking about the people that don't want to work or that are, you know, trying to build the system. I'm talking about people that did what they said they were going to do, that stood up to their commitment, that honored that commitment and went and did things that other people weren't willing to do. And now all of a sudden, we as a government are saying, sorry, you'll have to wait. So my whole thing for that is that where did we as a society become so lackadaisical that, like, and I'm not picking on you. I like the fact that I'm actually getting the viewpoint of the man on the street with you, because I know your routines and I know how you are. And it's not to put you on the spot, but it's to make a point of the fact that that's how the average American is, because of the fact that if it's someone, like, for example, if I was being shipped off to Iraq, you'd be interested. You'd know about my unit. You'd look to see if my unit would show up in the evening news, if there had been any casualties in my unit. So there was that interest because you know someone personally. But to me, I guess because I've been in the military, the thing that gets me is that I would think that I would be more grateful when a total stranger is out there defending my freedom as opposed to someone that I know. Because this person isn't just going out there to fight for Charlie or for Chris or for Andy or Angel Girl or Mark. He's doing it for the American people. And my whole thing is that we as an American people, and Andy brought up a great point, because honestly, it just blows my mind, because an idiot like Charlie Sheen, and I'm quoting him directly, can get a million followers in 24 hours. Try having a fundraiser
for
a homeless shelter.
Look what he did. I mean, come on.
Exactly. That is my point.
He's watching on Facebook or whatever it is. I mean, yeah, I do watch one of his, I did do watch or whatever it is. One of Charlie Sheen's shows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yet, okay, I've seen so many people, actors, actresses, whatever, come into the news lately, like this No Tomorrow. Why are we, as little peons, picking on such a great act? I mean,
That is my point, and that's what I'm saying. It drives me nuts that a million people were willing to take the time that it took for them to follow this idiot on Twitter to make sure that they could, you know what shenanigans he's up to, as my son would say. But then the thing is, like I said, how many times haven't we had fundraisers for disabled veterans? Haven't we had bake sales for homeless shelters? Haven't we had raffle tickets? You're selling a raffle for a dollar. And you see it on Facebook, having a fundraiser for this nonprofit or a cancer research or all this. You don't get a million people in 23 hours because they're too busy to be bothered. But they have the time to be bothered with some knucklehead who God has blessed them with more abundance and more wealth than most of us will ever know in a lifetime. And he's basically throwing it away. So he's getting glorified and rewarded for acting like an idiot. And I feel bad using the word idiot, because I really honestly have to say there is something seriously wrong with this man, either mentally, you know, drugs, psychologically, alcohol, whatever is going on
with this person.
You think? And you know what the sad part is? That whoever his handlers are or whoever, they're eating this up because it's making more money for them. It's basically they're using him or just letting him go loose, because that way
it brings
more attention to him.
It's not only him either. It's not only him. Look at the other one. Mel Gibson's in the news right now as well for something he's done.
Exactly.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? And the thing that gets me is, like, and I know someone put it on Facebook, and that's what set me off, where every so often someone will put it up on their status that this private got killed, this sergeant got killed, this one, and no one knows about it. No one even knows their name. No one even cares. But everybody knows what Charlie Sheen said 2 seconds ago. Everybody knows who Mel Gibson, you know, hit or what thing, freaking, what's her name, Lindsay Lohan stole. Really, people, that is what we as an American society has come. I personally think that our forefathers are flipping in their graves to see the apathy that we have. This is what our country was built on. Our country was built on a solid backbone of hard work, of honesty, of loyalty, of God-fearing people. And when I say God-fearing, it's not like God's this bad thing. God-fearing meant that we were willing to keep ourselves in check, to know what was right and what was wrong. And I don't know where that went. And it was kind of funny because I remember growing up as a young girl, I was a little kid, and I remember in the 70s seeing a bumper sticker that said, question authority. And I, to me, at that point, that it was funny because to me it was like, question authority, what does that mean? Does that mean if my teacher tells me to do something or my mom tells me to do something, I'm supposed to question it? Or, you know what, it wasn't that. It was, now I understand that what that question is, it's a very simple question, two words, question authority, is basically telling us when someone higher up or someone that we entrust with power, because with great power, great responsibility, when we okay. need to hold them accountable. We need to ask them why. Why are you doing this? Like the thing that is going on in Wisconsin right now, these people elected this governor, power to them. They're the ones that elected him. They're going to have to deal with the aftermath. And I find it offensive that a lot of Americans think that, well, the unions are bad, they're powerful, that all people that are union workers are making tons of money and they're not doing
okay.
any work. And
but here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
And people can comment in the room all you want. I'm just sitting here watching it. And
right.
But you're sitting here talking to somebody who hasn't even been or even once heard or been in the military, okay?
But see, that's why I pick on you, Chris, and that's why you make a perfect sounding board when I bring up these topics, because I, and the thing is that, and that's what gets me, you don't understand about being in the military, never been, never have been, but the thing is you still have apathy. For example, if someone reached out to you and said, there's this veteran that needs help, you are disabled yourself, but you wouldn't hesitate twice to help in any way you can. You wouldn't hesitate twice. If you had $2 in your wallet, you would take out those $2 and give them to someone that needed them more. That's what I'm talking about. So the fact that there's people out there that use the excuse, I've never been, I don't know what it's like, not a valid excuse because of the fact that that doesn't mean anything. Like with everything that's going on in Wisconsin now, a lot of people forget that there's a lot of menial jobs that are union. And the only reason that had to happen is because these people were being abused, like chambermaids and janitors and people that wash dishes and people that wait on you at restaurants and bartenders and firefighters and police officers. I mean, it goes beyond. I mean, there's electricians, there's engineers, there's, you know, all these other unions that people don't think about. They just think about these big, powerful ones. And granted, we do have that stereotype of the construction worker on the side of the road with 20 guys looking in a hole and only one person doing the job. I've seen it myself. Granted, that's where that misconception comes from. But again, it's like anything else in society. There's the 10% that screw it up, and there's the 90% that quietly behind the scenes do their job day in and day out. And my whole thing is, why should teachers be penalized or legal aids or people that work with disabilities? Like the first ones to go, and this is what gets me, the first ones to go when there's a budget cut in the schools are the special needs aides. Those are the ones that would help someone with a severe disability to be able to stay in a mainstream class. So that's the first person to get laid off. Yet you have nonprofits where the CEOs are making $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. How is that possible? For example, let me give you an example. When I worked for a certain nonprofit, we won't mention, that's how you and I met, Chris. I was actually your career counselor. I was making barely $14 an hour. $14 an hour working for a nonprofit, and my job consisted of helping people like Chris with disabilities find employment. And it didn't involve me sitting in an office. I was driving my own vehicle from point A to point B, picking up clients, taking them to job interviews, taking them to find places to fill out applications, helping them with resumes, helping them with interviews. You know, if they needed to learn how to dress or how to do certain things, I had to help them with that, self-esteem issues, all these things. And we had, on a given day, 8-9 hour day, I'd be seeing 7 to 9 clients. So you're talking about a client an hour. And then on top of that, because I was using my own vehicle, putting wear and tear on my own vehicle, and we weren't being compensated, you know, gasoline, $3 a gallon, we weren't being compensated that much. My phone bill was between $100 to $200 a month. I was getting a $50 stipend a month for that. This is a nonprofit, and I did it because I love.
Okay. I don't know what happened there.
I found it fulfilling. I couldn't. Yet you fast forward, and the people that are in charge,
okay. Hold up,
they're making $100,000, $200,000 a year. Doesn't make sense to me. You know what I'm saying?
Kelly, you dropped out.
Yes. Right?
You dropped out there for a minute. You dropped out for a minute.
Well, I am back. So my point was that that's another thing that's being overseen now. As a matter of fact, in the state of Massachusetts, Martha Coakley, who's the attorney general, came up on that, of the fact that there are these people serving on nonprofit boards that are getting exorbitant about money. I mean, one of the companies, which is in litigation, so I won't even mention the name, one of the board members got an $11 million buyout. $11 million. Do you know how many clients and veterans we could help with emailing $11 million?
Oh, I'm sure that's quite a bit.
It is. It's quite a bit. And you know, it is a lot of money. And the thing is, I bring this up because it's, and again, I'm not the type to bring this up on my show to be angry or to rant and rave about it. I want to instill passion in people because I know that my listeners are passionate about what they're doing, are passionate about. Jocelyn, hi, honey, how are you? Sorry, I didn't mean to lose my thought, but my niece, I just see her. She just jumped in the chat room. Hi, Jocelyn, how are you? So my whole thing with this is that I want to really make you guys passionate to do something. And again, not everybody is going to be comfortable calling their congressman or their congresswoman or their mayor. But you know what? If you can volunteer for an hour or two at a veteran house, a veteran hospital, they want company. Some of these veterans are in those hospitals for months going through rehab, and their families, some of them are far away, so they can't come and visit them. They would love to have company. Write a letter. Become a pen pal with them. You know, those kind of things, even if it's, you know, having a big sister or a big brother. So the reality is that there's so much that you can do. In worst case scenario, if all you can do is if you just happen to be in the area where you see a soldier, shake his hand or her hand and say thank you. That's it. You guys don't understand how huge that can be. That's the reality of it. So my point with you guys, this rant on Thursday, is I really want to encourage you to think of ways that you could really, really make a difference in someone's life. And we always think that it's this huge check that we have to write or that it's this huge thing that we have to do. I can tell you from personal experience that the small things can make the biggest difference. They really, really can. And even like
you're
I said, saying
right.
thank you, writing a letter, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we can do. So that, guys, is what I'm going to leave you with. And I like what Andy said. Andy said, remember how Rome fell because people got decadent and coughed and caught up in the bread and circus things. The exact same thing is killing us now. And the thing is, you know, it's pretty funny because the reality is that we as an American society are so blessed, so blessed. And I know it doesn't seem like it because we do have homelessness and we have people that are hungry in our country. But do you realize that sometimes the poorest people in our country are actually better off than the majority of people in third world countries? That's scary. And we are so not grateful for that sometimes. We're blessed. And I just want you guys, if there's any way that you can pay it forward, you want to go out
pay
there and do small acts of kindness. That's what you need to do.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness, Mark, you're too funny. Okay, on that note, Chris, I'm going to hold you up for a sec because I wanted to, before we go to Bill, because I see him waiting, remind everybody the guest call-in number is 347-989-1473. If you have any comments, concerns, questions, if you'd like to ask some of the stuff that we brought up on the show, or if you are going to have questions for Bill as he comes in and shares his story with us. We also have the toll-free number, 1-877-907-7217. That's toll-free if you happen to incur costs. You can also check us out online, www.blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywomanWMN. You can listen to the show that way as well. Join us in the chat room. You can listen to us on your smartphone if you have that as well. Come right on in and join us. iTunes, we are there as well. Mark, you have a good point. We definitely need to, when we have the show up and going, we got to do the Snoopy dance, my happy dance. Just to let you all know, I'm doing the happy dance because I am psyched. We don't have any electrical glitches. We have internet, even though we have a lot of rain. I have everybody in the chat room. I'm so excited to see you all there. And I'm going to get to talk to my buddy, Bill. So before we bring him in the room, I want to let you guys know, Bill McLean, talent extraordinaire. You guys heard a little bit about him last week when he was here. I just had to have him back. He's got so much stuff in the works, and there's just so much to him that we didn't even get to talk. So I was excited that he was available so we could have him back. And before we bring Bill into the room, I would like to play a small song out there for my girl Julie.
Can you check? I was going to make a small little conversational piece before Miss Charlie went off on her Thursday rant.
It's my Thursday tirade. I am allowed to tirade people. Is that even correct English, tirade? How would you say it? I went on a tirade. The act of tirading. I don't even think that's proper English. Anyway, go ahead, ma'am. What's up?
I was going to say, we were talking last week about, or the week before, within the last couple of shows that we've had, we were talking about the American Idol and all of that and stuff like that.
Yes.
Well, I want to make a correction.
I
actually saw the last act of the Deborah Crosby show that is the My TV network. And this was when we were talking about the American Idol piece.
Yes.
It was the act that I really caught was the last act that
was
on.
Was it a Quandra?
I don't know who it was.
Okay.
But because I didn't catch all of it, so I don't know who it was, but I wanted everyone in our area to know that I did finally catch a glimpse of the very talented show that plays on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m.?
11 a.m. on my TV, yes. My TV network, I think it's my TV 68, but my TV network, look it up in your local listings, 11 a.m., Deborah Crosby, Talent Quest. And I truly was a judge on it. I think they showed it. It's funny. It sounds horrible, but I didn't even get to see it because I've been traveling, and I was actually on it. They did, I think they filmed three segments. So I think Sunday was my last segment, or there's one more. But anyway, the talent there is amazing. So if you ever get a chance to check it out, definitely do it. And they're always looking for talent. And when I refer to talent, it's not just singing. It's dancing. It's acting. If you happen to be an actress or an actor, musicians, if you play an instrument, comedy, stand-up routines, they do all of that. So definitely look them up. It's DeborahCrosbyTV.com. You can look her up. Or just look up Deborah Crosby Talent Quest on Facebook. She's there as well. Let her know Charlie sent you. And you can get on their website and audition and go up there and see if you want to actually go out there and show your talent. Mountain Man, why don't we play Don't Give It Rough by Rhea? I haven't heard from Rhea in a while. It'd be kind of nice to hear her song before we let Bill into the building.
All right. I've got it over here.
Don't give it rough. He got it. Yeah.
Don't give it away, girl.
we're back. And that was the very talented Rhea Eaton with Don't Give It Away. Amazing talent. She's like 16, little the teeny bopper there. She's gorgeous. She's beautiful. She's very talented. Love her style. Actually going to be having her back on the show in a few months because she's doing some great big things. Real quick, before we let Bill in, I have to say this. I told you guys my niece is listening all the way from Costa Rica, and my sister is listening, and my sister does not speak a word of English. So you guys are going to humor me. I got to say hi to her in Spanish. Jeannie, hola, ¿cómo estás? Espero que te esté viendo todo por allá. Aquí saludándote desde Filadelfia. Estoy visitando a Eric y a Sara y a los muchachos. Espero que todos estén bien y gracias por estar con nosotros. Mucho gusto y besitos a todos. I'm back just telling her thank you for tuning in and that I'm straight from Philly and saying hi to her and my other family out there. So, guys, Mark, what? How? Love the guitar. He's so funny. He's like, what? How? I think Mark must have thought he accidentally switched over to the language Spanish radio station. He's like, what happened?
Wow.
See,
wow,
Mark, I wanted to see if you were paying attention. Bill, where's my man? Bring him in the room, Mountain Man.
Mountain Man's just rearranging himself. So just give me one.
Oh, dude, way too much information. TMI, my man. TMI.
Hey, I was sitting up. Thank you. Bill, you in the house?
I'm in the house. You in the house?
Oh, man.
Bill's in the house. Watch out.
Bill, you missed it. This man just said, hold on, I got to rearrange myself.
Ah,
TMI,
well,
people.
Yeah.
Family show. Keep it clean.
Oh, man, just saying.
Andy's funny. He puts in Spanish in the chat room, mi tocadiscos está roto. My record player is broken. Andy, I'm glad to see
what?
You paid attention to Spanish class.
Okay.
Oh, man. Bill, how are you?
Charlie, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. We kind of caught in the middle. I have a niece that's listening all the way from, like, San Jose, Costa Rica. And it was funny. Her mom's on there, my sister, and she doesn't speak a lick of English, so I kind of was saying hi to her in Spanish. And I think Mark kind of zoned out for a minute, one of our listeners. And all of a sudden, he's like, what, huh? What happened? Because it went from English to Spanish, and he thought something was wrong with the connection.
What lizard? I don't know of any lizard.
Oh, man. I don't even know what you guys are talking about in that chat room. That Mark wants you all to leave his lizard alone. Jeez, Buzz, man. Family show, people. Family show.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Bill, I heard through a little birdie on Facebook that you have some amazing news to share.
Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah, well, tell us what's going on.
Well, okay, we'll start with Scooter Magruder. How's that sound?
That sounds awesome.
Good. Well, as you know, Charlie, from firsthand experience, we filmed the movie 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, we filmed it. We've been working on editing, got all the editing done, got all the sound done, got it all back, and we decided on the spur of the moment, literally, to put it into a film festival, just to see what kind of a reaction we could get. So we entered the film into the L.A. Film Festival, they had just over 200 entries. They accepted 97 films out of the 200. This is an international film festival, so we were up against films from all over the world. And
wow.
There were 5 feature films nominated for Best Feature Film, People's Choice Awards. Scooter Magruder is one of those films.
That is amazing. You know, it's funny because people don't kind of understand what goes into being able to being accepted into one of these film festivals, never mind actually being picked for that. Could you explain a little bit about what the process was and what it entails?
Well, there's a panel of the people that run this film festival, and the panel looks at all the films that are submitted. And we're talking about films from Ireland. They said they had like 17 films from Ireland this year. Films from Russia, Russia, Germany, Japan, China, just all over the world. Canada sent a bunch of films to it. And they have to watch all these films, which is probably quite a job. You sit down and think about the hours involved. 200 films.
Yeah.
Some of them are features. Some of them are shorts. Some of them are experimental and things like that. And then they decide which ones are the best and are suitable for their specific whatever they're looking for, their region, whatnot. So out of the 200 films, a little over 200 films this year, they accepted 97 films. There are some short films and some feature films. So that's quite a bit right there. But then out of the ones that they accept, again, 97 films. Now they have to pick.
Now,
let
me stop you right there. So here you have all these films that were entered, and out of the 200 that they probably bothered to look at, because I'm assuming there has to be some way for them to, you know, scale it down so they don't wind up looking at 1,000 movies. So you have 97 films that were accepted. And out of those 97, how many did you say were picked for the People's Choice Award?
They picked 5 feature films for the People's Choice Best Feature Film.
So basically, can you explain to us what exactly the People's Choice Award is in realms of a film festival?
The People's Choice Award, Best Feature Film, it's out of the top ones that they're looking at, they have a point system, which they didn't divulge all to me. They just said, you know, we judge this way, we judge that way. The ones that score the highest get put into a special category, and then once they have so many of those, then they picked the best of the best, and this year they ended up with 5 feature films and 5 short films and 5 experimental films that were, you know, experimental or artsy, whatever. So there's 5 of each category, and those are put up for best feature film, which is People's Choice. So now the way the People's Choice works is you go to the film festival. Ours is April 2nd. Ours is going to be on April 2nd in Lewiston, Auburn, Maine. So if you're in Maine and you're out there listening, or you're close to Maine, you know, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, come on up to the festival. The way it works is this. They're going to put the 5 featured films that were chosen for People's Choice, Best Feature Film, they're going to put them into a block, and you'll be able to watch all 5 of those if you want to. After each film, they're going to have you fill out some sort of a survey card. Now, obviously, the film that garners the most, let's say they're using stars, like 5 stars. The film that garners the most stars or the highest percentage, that's the film that's the one that'll win Best Feature Film.
See, it's an amazing process because people, you know, we hear about the film festivals all the time. And real quick, for everybody in our chat room, I actually put the web link up there. It's www.lafilmfestival.org, and that'll take you directly to the site. And I've noticed that they've actually updated the site, so they actually, when you go on there and brings you to the main page, it actually tells you that the tickets are on sale to be able to view the movies. It also says, real cool, volunteers wanted, click here. If you feel like being in Maine and want to volunteer, that's a cool way to get to network and know people and actually get to see some of the movies for free. Also, it actually has the link up for the Film Festival People's Choice Award nominees, and it tells you the link to click on there as well. Also, let you know, if you guys are going to go to Maine, the actual gala dinner and the award ceremony is sold out. So that is sold out. But from what I'm gathering here, they still have tickets available for the actual movies. So you can check on there. You can actually buy the tickets online if you choose to. It has all the directions and everything. Now, I'm going to walk with Bill through this because I actually clicked on the link for the People's Choice Award nominees, and you're right, it's broken it up into short film, feature-length film, documentaries, and experimental. But one of the things that gets me is that, you know, when you hear of an independent movie being made like you, which I want you to talk a little bit more about in a minute, for it to get to this place, people are thinking, well, it's probably local movies. Now, if you look at the short film categories, there's local movies, but you have Portland, Maine, Rhode Island, Russia, New York, and Ireland. Those are the places where the five finalists in the short films are from.
Yep.
For the feature length, you have New York, California, New Jersey, Portland, and Monmouth, which is you, from Maine. For the documentaries, you have from Maine, New York, Australia, New York as well, and Lewiston, Maine. And for the experimental, you have all the way from Argentina, Canada, Auburn, Maine, and Lewiston. So there's such a validity to what you have done. Now, Bill, this is where I want you to really break it down, because it's something that we really couldn't get into last week, because it just, for me personally, because I saw the process, it blows my mind. And for you guys out there, you listeners, who love movies and who go to the movie theater to see the final product, or actually have, I consider it a blessing, have had a blessing to go see an independent movie and see that and have a good quality movie like, you know, Roz and the Girl, which was started as a small independent project before the studios picked it up, or even more independent, where it's a friend of yours that made a movie and, you know, you went to see it, maybe it was a thesis for college or whatever. You guys don't understand the work that goes into it and the expense that goes into it. Now, Bill, I really want you to break it down, because you did talk about how you got the idea, how you wrote the script, but you need to let us know, how is it that you were able to make such a good quality movie? Because if you look at this movie, it's up there with The Grown-Ups and anything that Adam Sandler has done, or and some of the movies that Jennifer Aniston has done, because it's a romantic comedy. How did you get that caliber, and how were you able to find the resources and the funds to do it?
Wow, I really love this lady. Charlie, you're amazing. you know, I've been acting for quite some time, 13 years professionally, 20 years, you know, just wanting to be. So I've been very lucky to have been doing it this long. And I wanted to see more film made up here, so I started Pre-Train Films. Once I started, it was a matter of finding some scripts and making some films. I wrote Scooter Magruder, and I thought, you know, if I write this film and I keep the props down to a minimum, things like that, I can actually shoot this film. Well, I got to tell you, a good friend of mine, Vanessa Novak, she has one of the lead roles in the film. She plays plays the love interest in the film. Vanessa has been pushing me and going, hey, why don't you just go ahead and make it? Why don't you just do it? You know a lot of people. Why don't you call in a few favors and just pull the trigger and do this thing? And because she pushed me so hard, I just went, you know what? I can do this. What's the worst people can say when you ask them a question? You know, the worst they can say is no.
Right, exactly.
So I started going through you know, props list, things like that, seeing what we had. Tiffany started going through and seeing what she could get, and she has a lot of friends and things that have, you know, clothing, jewelry, things like that, stuff we could help you know, put for the wardrobe and the props and things. Plus, as you know, an independent film, a lot of actors have quite a wardrobe themselves, and so we had people send us photographs and things of you know, stuff that they had, see if we could make it work. Some of the stuff was great.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to, as far as actors goes, I just put out an audition notice. I paid $185 and got three giant rooms in the newest hotel up here in Maine, up in Lewiston, the Ramada Inn.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous place, beautiful place. We had just over 100 people show up for the auditions, and, you know, out of those 100, I'd say about 90% were actually actors. You know, there were a few people off the street, but mostly actors, which is great, because then I was able to pick and choose from the best of the best to see what we can put together for the film. So the actors
made
it easy to put together, and I told everyone up front, I said, this is no pay. I will give you a percentage if you have a speaking role. If we sell the film, you know, you'll get a percentage of the profit. And people came, and we were able to put the cast together. The toughest part was going through set locations and finding the set locations and Because when you write a script, if you see a room, you gotta get the right room. You know, you can't just throw any room.
Yeah.
So, you know how it is. Like the
especially,
attic.
Right, and the thing, too, because one of the things that listeners don't realize sometimes if you've never done it, when you get a script, the writer has an idea in his mind. He's created a world within that script. And then the director, which in this case was you, but in most cases when it's not, the director has to try to find that imaginary world that you've created in the real world. Or if you have the money, you create it. But when you are on a shoestring budget, as in your case, how are you able to transform that imaginary world that you created in your script and bring it into the set to be able to visualize it the way you saw it so the rest of us could see it?
Well, step one was to read the script with the directors, Jeff Sullivan and Tiffany McLean. Jeff did the majority of directing. Tiffany had to direct some scenes when Jeff was not available, so they are what you'd call co-directors on the film. And reading the story through with them while I'm there was very helpful to try and show them my mindset. And I got to tell you, that was the toughest part because as a writer, you do have a picture in your head. They can't see it. And sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. So the toughest thing for me was stepping back and saying, okay, guys, I see where you're going with this. Go ahead and do it that way. Because it's one of those things where do you get the film made or do you argue for 24 hours and then shoot? You lose a day. So, you know how it is. There were a few little times when I was, wanted to say something but didn't. But I'll tell you, if you surround yourself with good, competent people that know what they're doing, you should be able to trust them. And I bit my tongue a few times and trusted them, and the scenes came out amazing. There's a scene in the film, a final scene in the film with Vanessa Novak and Michael Best. And this scene was not in the script whatsoever. I don't know where it came from, but I was doing things, and they were out in the kitchen, and they were shooting some extra footage for this and that. And Mike just starts going off. Mike's amazing like that. And he starts going off and doing stuff, and Vanessa played off of him. And the scene actually made it into the final film, which is really great because it's not something that I wrote, but it's funny.
It's funny, too, because, as an actor, well, it depends. Some actors aren't that comfortable with improv, but one of the things that I noticed with your crew is, one, you got some amazing talent, and that's another thing that people have a misconception. They don't realize the amount of incredible talent that's out here in the independent world. They think that, only the Brad Pitts or Angelina Jolie's or whatever are out there that, they're the ones that got signed or whatever because they're so talented and that. It's not the case. The hardest thing that people have a hard time with believing is that some people choose to do the independent route because they love acting so much, they love their craft so much. For them, it's more about working on different projects as opposed to how much money they're getting paid or how much, they're materially speaking. So
right.
You definitely were able, but that's a testament to you as a person, too, because the caliber of people that surround themselves to you, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, and that hasn't been the case with, because I've been involved in some other productions where I literally would sit there going, someone shoot me, please, because I don't know how I got talked into this, because it's just not the type of people that are going to bring that out where, I mean, for me to see the process, and for our listeners, if you can picture this, where here Bill is giving people a script, a part, once they got cast into it. Now they have to make it, not only do they have to bring the character that Bill has created in his head to life, but then they have to take that character, once it's brought to life, and make it part of them as well to make it believable. So it doesn't become a caricature, which Bill... Explain a little bit to me. I want you to really talk a little bit more about this because when you have something like a romantic comedy, and in your case, the larger-than-life aspects of some of your characters, it's very easy for them to turn into a caricature if the actor doesn't know what they're doing. How do you think you were able to keep it where they were still believable and to create the kind of project that you did?
Well, honestly, a lot of help came in the fact that once we got on the set, some of the scenes had you know, numerous people in them. And the scenes that had a lot of people in them, it's when you get into group mentality, it's one of those things where they kind of, everyone wants to make it work, so they all kind of watch, pay attention, play off each other, and that way, if somebody starts going nuts so over the top, it tends to radiate out, and everyone starts doing it, and honestly, within moments, the director will go, cut.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going a little too far, the director will stop you, generally. So, having a competent director and assistant director, having me on the set because I wrote it, I was able to help out, but only when they ask. You know, when there was a question about the character from the actor to the directors, I was able to help my input if I didn't think the director had the right idea or if I didn't think the actor was understanding what the director was saying. I'm the kind of, they should call me a middleman. I'm a problem solver. So I solve problems. That's what I do. So I'll look at it and go, okay, he's saying this, but he's not getting it, so now I got to find a way to make him understand it. And that's, I can't really put it in words, but that is what I do on a set if I have to. So really, getting good actors to begin with was a great start. And the actors can look at that, and once they get rolling a day or two, they kind of know their character. Once you get them that first day out of the way, the second day is much easier because they know kind of the boundaries on the character. Take Michael Best, for instance. He's a stage actor who's getting into film. He's done a lot of stage, expensive stage work. The man's a genius. I mean, comedic giant. This guy is unstoppable. Mm-hmm. And we got into a scene, and I very quickly realized, this guy's funnier than me. he's not only funnier than me, he's better than me. And so I was starting to get worried about being able to stay in a scene with this guy.
That's funny.
I got lucky because I just played myself as really passive. I went really passive with it. He got aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And it works great because of our differences, you know, height, weight, size, whatever. It's great seeing him have the upper hand in some of the scenes where in real life it probably wouldn't happen, you know, with two guys those different sizes. But the guy's a genius. He's a giant. And, you know, we're working together, and this guy just seems to know where he's going. So I followed the first day. And then the second day I found a nice, comfortable place to be with him. And he can really go over the top, but his character in the film is a nerdy gamer. A late 30s, early 40s nerdy gamer dude. And so...
Mm-hmm.
It's okay if he goes over a little bit because people that play video games can be a little odd at times. I play video games myself.
Just,
you know,
a little bit odd. That's right.
I play video games myself, so don't hate. And I can be really
odd.
Yeah,
me too. I'm the same way.
But you take the other
show real quick, Bill, before we continue on that type of I really want to continue this. Hold on a sec. Just to let everybody know, we're at the 8 hour. It is 8 o'clock. And to guest 16853, 16862, 16877, welcome to the room. Nice to have you guys here. We have the incredibly talented Bill McLean in the building talking to us. He's an amazing actor, stunt person, which we haven't even gotten to that point yet, director, writer, and has... Now, Bill, if I'm not mistaken, this is your first feature-length film?
This is our, as Freight Train Films, this is our very first completed feature-length film.
Yes, so we're going to talk a little bit. So this is his first feature-length film that is done under the Freight Train Productions, and I mean Freight Train Films. And the thing is that it got submitted to the LA Film Festival. It got accepted out of over 200 entries. And not only that, it was picked as one of the finalists, one of the nominees. There's five nominees out of all of them for the People's Choice Award, which is kind of like the best of the best for that showing, which is an amazing accomplishment because there's people that have been in this business forever and never even get anywhere near that. So I want to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But for those of you that are just joining us, the call-in number is 1-347-989-1473 if you'd like to talk to Bill if you have any questions, concerns, or comments for him as well. Our toll-free number that incurs a cost is 1-877-907-7217. Or you can join us in our chat room, www.blogtalkradio.com, ordinarywoman.com/before those. And when you go to our segment page, which is why I interrupted Bill real quick, the trailer for Scrutum Magruder is actually up on there. I want you guys to take a gander at it. It's a little short preview of what's coming on. I was blessed. I know a little bit more of what's to come. So let me tell you, this is some funny stuff. So getting back to Bill. Now, Bill, you were talking about, and this is something that I really want to touch on, and I'm glad you brought it up. Here you are. You're basically were the casting director for this project, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct.
So here you are. You picked this great talent that you were just talking about, this gentleman that you had scenes with, and all of a sudden you go, wow, this guy's better than me. This guy's funnier than me. And you adjusted in a way so it worked. Now, I am going to kind of put you on the spot because I know you. And I think this is a testament to why these amazing actors keep coming out for you, because it's very easy in this industry for egos to come to play. Very easy. Where, wait a minute, this person's better than me, so I need to find a way to upstage them. So as an actor, Bill, and especially because this is your film, what are some of the ways that you've learned, because you just mentioned how you worked it into that scene, what are some ways that you've learned that sometimes by taking the high road and sometimes downplaying your role and going a different venue with it actually makes it bigger than life and actually makes it work more? What are some of the things that you've done to be able to create that environment where you can work with someone so amazingly talented and still not get lost kind of sort of in the scene?
That's a great question. That particular scene was probably the toughest thing I had to do as an actor in 13 years, finding a way to make that scene work. And literally, I had literally minutes, that's it, 3 or 4 minutes before they said, roll them. And I went in there kind of going, oh, crap, here goes. I think I'd have to put that on to, I'm one of 7 children, and I was born in the middle. There were 3.
Oh, yeah.
three older than me and 3 younger than me, and I had to be the mediator. And so I had to learn how to do things and look at things. And some of my brothers make fun of me because I have what they call a 45-second delay.
God, I wish I had one of those. It would save me so much trouble.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's great to have at times and not at others, but sometimes when you ask me something, I'll take my time to think it over before I open my mouth. And some days I'm on my game better, some days I'm not. So the days I'm not so much on my game, you get that 45-second delay. but that day, I guess I was on, because when they said roll 'em, we launched into the scene, and it really flowed. And I probably would attest a lot of that to how really good the other actor was. I was able to just kind of roll along with him, and we found a rhythm. It was a mutual thing. As far as being a middle child, I learned how to adapt and cope. That's the main thing. I did retail sales for 17 years. So I had to learn how to talk to several different types of people, one after another. You know, I'd have to go in there and be funny for one guy and be serious for the next. Retail sales will do that for you. So I think those two things, being a middle child and having a background in sales, helped me an awful lot with learning how to act differently in different scenes. And Mike certainly brought the best out of me. I think that Scooter's probably one of the toughest roles I've ever taken, and I was very satisfied at the end because I had people like Michael Best, Vanessa Novak, Wendy Olafson, and Sarah Nicklin driving me to stay in the scenes with them. I'll tell you who had the toughest time in this film.
Mm-hmm.
The toughest character to play, believe it or not, was Elizabeth, as played by Vanessa Novak. Vanessa is fairly new to the acting as far as not so much in years, but number of projects, because she's got a full-time job and a family. And we kind of threw her into this as a fairly new actress. And she had to play a character that was beautiful, sexy, kind, and tomboyish and tough all at the same time. If you, as an actress, have never tried something like that, that's a lot to ask from somebody, even professionally trained.
That is very true. You know, you have a valid point there because it's funny. I have a script that we wrote, and jokingly we were sitting around a table once saying, well, you know, if you had a big budget, who would you pick to play these particular characters? And what you just described is similar to one of the characters that we wrote into the script, and somebody blurted out Michelle Rodriguez, amazing actress. Doesn't have the balance you just talked about, because that's something that some actresses, if you notice, it's very difficult to be tough and tomboyish when it's required to, but then to put you in high heels and a dress or to put you in makeup or to have you be softer as opposed to command presence, it's very difficult. It's a very difficult balance to achieve, especially when you're telling us it was a newer actress that it really is a testament, one, to her raw talent, but also to the fact that as a director or someone who is there to be able to bring that out in these actresses. Now, I have to ask you a question, and it actually pertains a little bit to this. I know, you know, where you wrote the script from, where it came from. Where did Scooter Magruder actually come from? I mean, what was the inspiration for that character and the way you portrayed him?
Oh, man, I love you. I've wanted someone to ask me that question for so long. Scooter is a conglomeration of my dear brother, Jerry. He's my older brother. My older brother, Jerry, will be sitting in a room quietly or talking with someone and then just out of the blue belt out a line from a rock song. Okay, and just literally just boom, here it comes, there it goes, and then continue on to the next thing. And it made me laugh. It always makes me laugh. So Scooter tends to know a lot about rock and roll. He might blurt out a song. The other character was a guy that I worked with for several years. His name is Scott, and his last name is Crooker. And Scott, a lot of people started calling him Scooter in the shop. And one day we were out there goofing around, someone said Scooter, and I went Scooter Magruder, and that was it. The name stuck, and we called him that for like 3 years. So some of the stuff that he does is in that character. Like when you watch the film, you'll see a scene that involves, I'm not going to give it away, but the scene involves a chainsaw, a tree, and a dog. And this scene, I guarantee, will make you laugh. And what I do after the chainsaw scene is a stance that this guy does all the time. It just, the guy's funny. He doesn't even know it. So I use his stances and his physical bearing on Scooter. I use my brother's rock and roll knowledge on Scooter, and I used a little bit of Surfer Dude on Scooter. So that's basically who he's based on. There may be a couple of other people that I know that I've kind of thrown in there a little, but those are the two main ones.
You know, it's funny because just watching you do some of the scenes and just from what I've seen in the trailers as well, it's a tricky balance when you're incorporating these type of characters that you just mentioned into one person and still keep them real or keep them likable. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because everybody always associates the gamer, rocker kind of dude, like empty and not kind of funny, but after a while kind of gets on your nerves because it's the kind of person that you have to clean up all the time. And I have to tell our listeners, I think one of the reasons that I loved this script, because I have to honestly tell you, I think this is the first time where I saw this type of script where he wasn't a loser. He had bad luck. You know what I mean? His circumstances caused him to be where he was, but this wasn't, he wasn't stupid, he wasn't, you know what I mean, he wasn't a flat out loser, lack of ambition, that he kind of had a place to go. So my question is, because I want everybody to really understand how deep it gets into when you're developing a character, how are you able to incorporate all those things, and what made you say, okay, this is what I want him to be? Yeah, okay, he might not be where he wants to be in life, but he still has all of these qualities.
Well, the honest truth, to finish the other question, and it merges into this one. The other 50%, because it's a quarter my brother and a quarter Scott, the other 50% is Bill McLean in real life. That character, I definitely infused a lot of what I see as, you know, where I want to go with my life, what I want to do. And I think you'll find, well, like you said, thank you so much for the compliment. When you said that you felt this guy wasn't a loser, that he had a place to go, that he had a goal in mind, he does. And I used my own personal upbringing and life as a major part of the character. But then I had to change him enough to people wouldn't think it was me. You know, I wanted to make people watch the film and go, this guy's just, oh, this poor guy. Give this kid a break.
Yeah, pretty much that's what, you know, it's funny because that's what I'm saying. I mean, I know I've seen other movies where they have the slacker dudes and it's kind of like, eh, whatever, they're funny and that's it. But, you know, you created this character that old ladies just want to bring you home and make you soup and get you away from that crazy aunt of yours kind of thing. You know what I mean? Because you have such an incredible balance. But honestly, I have to tell you, the people that know you can definitely see the Bill part of that character. They can definitely see it.
Yeah, my brother watched the first cut, and he went, it's a movie about you. That's not funny.
The thing that I admire, too, is your ability, while creating this character, to be able to laugh at yourself. You know, people don't understand that it's very, and for our listeners, I have to tell you this, and as an actor, I know this. It's cool when you get made up and you have makeup as a female. You have the makeup and you have the gown and you're doing the elegant roles or the, you know, like I got to be supposedly a rich parent at some rich hobnobby school. It was great. It was fun. You know, you had hair, makeup, the whole bit. Or if you play, in my case, the cop part, or, Bill, you do stunts too, so if you do the hardcore ninja or the bad guy, it's fine, you get dirty that way. Not so much fun when you're trying to flush a toilet and not look like the most miserable person in the world. Or when you're doing other stuff in this movie that, you know, you sit there and go, wow, I really don't want to be this guy. But you're able to give it some semblance of dignity, like, okay, I need to get through this for whatever reason. And I have to comment, the funniest part to me is in the trailer when you're doing the thing with the toilet. I actually saw one of my kids do that once, and it was hysterical because it's like, really, dude, this is how you're going to unstuff this toilet?
And the funny thing is,
he said to me, I just wanted to get it over with, Mom. It was like, I was so frustrated I couldn't get it done. And I was like, trying to get it to work, and it just wasn't working. So, Bill, going on to getting the movie made, budget-wise, for the people that see this movie, it's comparable. I could see it, you know, with other movies that have spent a huge amount of money to be made. And I also always hear people say, oh, I have this great script, but I don't have the money to make it. I can't do it because I need $1 million. I need $2 million. How did you make wine out of water, so to say? How did you make a full-length film out of nothing? And what resources did you use?
Once I got the people lined up and got the props and things, you'd be amazed at how generous people can be when you're trying to do something that they can honestly see you're really passionate about and you want to get done to help out the community. And, I mean, I got a stretched Hummer limousine donated for 2 days for this scene. I got a full-blown motorhome with air conditioning for the actors and actresses on the hottest day of the year for free. I got permission to shoot in a giant grocery store for free on a Saturday in the daytime when there were customers in the store.
That's funny to do that.
All I really did was ask. I walked up to people and I said, hey, I'm making this film. Here's some of the actors. I took some pictures of Michael Best and the beautiful ladies and said, we're gonna shoot a film here in Maine, and we'd like to shoot here, can we? And put a big old smile on. And they generally mostly said yes. Very few people turned me down, and that's pretty cool. It says a lot about the community. But I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
we spent under $7,000. We spent close to $5,000. That's it. That's all we spent on this entire film. So I'm kind of proud of that.
See, that boggles my mind because of, like I said, just from what I saw, not to mention your wife is a miracle worker because she was one of the main prop designers, right? The set designers and the props and stuff. Well, when I got to, I mean, I actually got to see her working on the set for the house. And I'm watching this woman, and I'm a hands-on kind of person, love arts and crafts, that kind of stuff. But to see the stuff that she was literally pulling out of the air, I was like, wow. Ingenuity doesn't even begin to describe it. And then when Shelly and I walked onto the auditorium where you guys were doing the game show scene,
yes, yes,
it absolutely blew my mind. Because I actually got to be on the set of Jeopardy when they filmed in Massachusetts a few years back.
Yeah.
Trust me, it wasn't that far off, except for the fact that the Jeopardy shooting was bigger because it was at the Wang Theater in Boston. The actual layoff and the way they did it, you really couldn't tell the difference. I mean, it just, it was to the point that Shelly and I got nosy, and we were actually backstage trying to figure out how they do this and how they do that because of the amazing... it just blows my mind. It just really blows my mind what you're telling me.
Yeah,
now, Bill, what I have to ask you is, what was the driving force behind Freight Train Films? I mean, you've talked about it, but what made you decide to start your own company on top of the fact that, I mean, because you wrote the scripts, you kind of saw what was out there, you've created this movie. What is the driving force now behind Freight Train Films, and where do you hope to see it go from here?
I want to get Freight Train Films on the map, and I believe we're there now. And I want to make sure that Freight Train Films can continue making films. If we sell Scooter, and we do have some screenings lined up with some real distributors, and I'm talking real distributors, you know, people that distribute worldwide, we already have some nice guaranteed screenings lined up. So there is a good chance we will sell the film. The money that we get from that will go to pay all of the actors that were in the film and the crew. And what's left over will go towards our next production. And it will be a much better production because we'll have a lot more money to work with at that point. I want Freight Train Films to be the film that to be the production company that people think about up here in Maine or even in New England that hires local talent and New England talent to make films, to make good quality films, and be able to actually pay people to be a part of the film. Because I thoroughly believe that independent film can make money. They just need a break, that's all. I want to be able to give people jobs, help the community, and have a blast doing what I love to do.
You know, and that is so true for me because one of the I guess it kind of bothers me when people say this because sometimes I hear people say, you're so lucky, or Bill's so lucky, or this one's so lucky, or Shelly's so lucky, and it's kind of like they say, the harder you work, the luckier you seem to get. Because people see the final project and they see, oh, this is a great film. It looked like you had fun doing it. They didn't see the months and months and months and months of preparation leading up to that point. And I want to touch a little bit about this when we come back from the break because I think this is very important because people have to understand when you go into this, you have to go in heart and soul. And that's why I'm going to put you on the spot with asking you a couple of questions. So real quick, I just want to take a break. For our listeners, this is blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman, and we are in the Diamond in the Rough show. Our guest tonight is Bill McLean, and if you wish to call in, it's 1-347-989-1473. The call-in number, if it's a toll call for you, our toll-free number is 1-877-907-7217. As usual, you can always join us if you have a smartphone. The mobile app is there on Blog Talk. We are on iTunes, and as usual, you can also go to our segment page on blogtalkradio.com/ordinarywoman. Join us in the chat room. We have a lively group in there that can't seem to stay out of trouble. We got ninjas and pirates and lasers, oh my, in there today. Real quick, I want to play a song. For those of you that are in the New England area, I mentioned this group earlier because I got to be a guest judge with Matt, one of the singers. There is a group called Silent Bravery, My Silent Bravery. Please Google them. They're on Facebook. And they actually got nominated for an award at the Worcester Music Festival that's going to be coming up, the Worcester Music Awards. Go to Facebook, Google them, My Silent Bravery. Please vote for them. They sound great. And I want to play one of their songs for the break. It's called Faith, and this is by My Silent Bravery.
One hell of a plan to reach global consciousness. Some people think they pulled out the helm and never like to give back again. Sickness is a bitterness. We're looking for the medicine. The problem is when we're left, we expect to feel the damn. Right away without delay, a product of the world today. Did you hear your mother say that something good is worth the wait? Something good is worth the wait. It just takes a little faith. Can you see it? If you don't believe it in the first place, it should all start today. When you believe, you'll see a bit goes a long way. Hell of a man to come and lead us to the promised land. But don't you think that he could use a hand? Get to your feet now so we can stand together. Sickness is a laziness. We're looking for the medicine. The problem is when we invest, we expect to steal the damn. Right away without delay, a product of the world today. Sinners too will be erased. Sinners will turn into saints. Sinners can turn into saints. It just takes a little faith. Can you see it? If you don't believe it in the first place, it can all start today. When you believe, you'll see a bit goes a long way. If you don't believe it in the first place, it can all start today. When you believe, you'll see a bit goes a long way. You'll see a bit goes a long way.
A website. Yes, that was our silent, My Silent Bravery. and that was their song Faith. And the information is in our chat room. It's www.thepulsemag.com. That is where you can go and vote. Check them out. They're also on Facebook. If you Google My Silent Bravery on Facebook, you will be able to check them out as well. If you feel the need to vote for them, that would be great, local band. Now, getting back to our show, we have the amazing Bill McLean in the building talking to us about his projects that he has just done, this movie Scrooge McGruder, that was nominated for an award at the L.A. Film Festival coming up on April 2nd. So, Bill, I'm going to put you on the spot. Everybody talks about wanting to be an actor, they want to be in the business, they want to write a script, but it's basically, when they talk about the fact that you put blood, sweat, and tears into this, it's no joke. So I know a little bit about the sacrifices that you made to get this movie, and I'm going to ask you specifically, do you think that when you're making something like this, it really involves putting everything into one basket?
Yeah, to make this movie, we really, really had to pound the pavement on this. It's all or nothing. You know, you get the film made or you don't get the film made, because you can't half make a film, because it's never finished. You got to finish the film, and in order to finish it, you really need to put the nose down and you know, put it on the grindstone and go. We gambled a lot with this film. We got a lot of people to volunteer. We got a lot of people that shifted in and out for us. We were able to get by with minimal crew some days, and other days we had big crew. But when it all counted, it didn't seem to pull through. But yeah, you don't write a script and then try to make a film. You write the script and you make the film, and you do whatever it takes to do it.
Now, Bill, do you really think that for you to be able to basically pull off something that most people would say is impossible? You made this great movie, film festival caliber, for it to be picked as a movie to be seen in a film festival, never mind being, nominated for an award. Do you think the fact that your wife has been such an amazing driving force and support contributed to that?
110%. Could not have done this without her, period. End of discussion.
But now, the thing is that you literally, I know you talked a little bit about it, but you literally, basically went all in on this. I mean, you just threw everything in there, because financially and work-wise and everything, you just put your whole heart and soul into it to make this a reality. And that can be very scary to some people. So I want to ask you, Bill, what do you think it is that motivated you to have so much faith in this movie and faith in what was going to come out of it to go all in like that?
Well, I know that people want to feel good. They want to laugh. They want to cry. They want to experience emotion. And I knew, writing the script, after I had the script polished, I know how to make people laugh. That's one thing I'm good at. And I knew the script was funny. I knew that if I could get good characters in there, good actors to portray them, it's funny on paper, but when you get a guy that can make the character come alive, it's twice as funny when you watch it.
Yes.
Case in point, Sarah Nicklin, she showed up for the trailer for it, like a test trailer. We were sort of fleshing out a scene or two. She came all the way up from Rhode Island, and I sent her the script, maybe a week before she came up for this two scenes. She came up, but when she started doing the scene, people on the set were just they were astounded. Not only did she automatically click with me, but she played off me, I played off of her. It was like the character came to life, and just there it was. Very funny. Well, I knew at that point that I had some serious talents involved in the project, and I knew people would laugh. And I know that if people laugh, they feel good. I want to make people feel good. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of anyone or anything. And so I wasn't really afraid to take that jump and put everything in there and just throw it out online, because I have an amazing family. I love my wife. I love my kids. I have an amazing life. And if we could make this film, and I went full time when we started shooting this film, I went acting full time, I stopped working altogether as far as the day job, quote unquote. And since then, I've done nothing but film. And, you know, Tippi's doing her work at her family's business and still finding time to help edit things at night. You know, it does take a lot of dedication. It definitely takes a lot of love and a lot of support. But I wasn't afraid to because, well, I've got an amazing family, and I'm not afraid to face anything. So I want to make people laugh. I want to entertain people, and I want to make you laugh. I want to make you listeners out there laugh. All you folks in the cyber room that are playing around right now, I'm going to make you guys laugh until you pee. That's the goal.
Trust me, you'll get there. You know, it's so refreshing to hear you be able to express the gratitude and the support that you have for your family. And the fact that from the interactions that I've seen, you guys bring it to another level where not only are you family, but there seems to be friendship there, which is a very difficult thing to obtain with family sometimes. And especially in a pressure cooker type of situation where you basically are doing this on top of, like you said, our listeners don't understand that you don't do this full time. You have a quote unquote day job that pays the bills for now. And, you know, your wife has commitments as well, and you have a family that you're raising. And then on top of this, you manage to be able to film this on weekends and wherever you could squeeze it in at night and be able to edit it whenever you could squeeze it in, you know, your wife doing that. And to come up with the kind of product that you do, it just boggles the mind to what you're going to come up with when, quote, unquote, this is your day job. Now, for our listeners, I want to let you guys know you need to go over and check www.freighttrainfilms.com. And, Bill, I'm going to put you on the spot because I was checking out the future projects section. Red Shirt had a little bit of an inkling. Tell me a little bit about that for our listeners.
Red Shirt was a character that my wife and I came up with on the spot for a national video contest for After Dark Films, 8 Films to Die For. If you've been to the video store and you're a horror fan, you've seen 8 Films to Die For and you've seen After Dark Films. They had a contest nationally 3 years ago, and I don't know, several thousand people entered the contest, and they took the top 10 guys and the top 10 girls' videos, and they flew them out to L.A., all expenses paid, 5 days, 4 nights, for a real and honest screen test to be in the actual film, called Perkins 14. So I threw this character together. Tiff and I got everything ready. We shot it in the garage, made it look like an old shed. And the trick was to make a scary little clip without using profanity or nudity or excessive violence. But yet it's for a horror film. So I found the irony in that pretty funny. So I sat down and took my world. So we turned the camera on, and I went somewhere that I had never been. Character came out.
Oh, you took a few of us there, too, trust me.
This guy, once the camera rolls, you never know what you're going to get with me. And this character came out, and it frightened me.
You, oh my God. Now, guys, I got to tell you, for my listeners, right, here I met Bill, a real sweet guy, cracking jokes the whole time. You were actually working as a stand-in for Ray Winston on Edge of Darkness, and you were also being a precision driver and doing your little stunts, huge stunts, all this stuff on it. So I met Bill, joking, funny. I loved his work ethic because he was there from 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, driving all the way from freaking Maine. So the people that were complaining about driving 10 minutes, I wanted to slap. And, you know, you were working till late at night, going home, coming back, doing the same thing, your attitude and everything. And so this is the Bill I know. And then one time I'm on the line, he says, oh, I want you to check out this video. Freaking sends me the link for this. I swear to goodness, listeners, had I seen this video before, I would have never gotten into that car with Bill. Ever. You guys need to go. You have it on your – is it on your website, Freight Trains, or is it – do you have it on YouTube?
I believe I have it on our film space. I'm going to try and put it on YouTube soon because it seems to be popular. On MySpace, on our film space, I've checked. I've checked all the videos in our film space. The closest video to mine has about 400 hits, 450 hits. On our film space, Red Shirt has over 1,200 hits.
You guys go to our film go to I'm typing it in there now, ourfilmspace.com. It's a free website. If you want to join, you can. It's to help you find out about acting, if you want to get involved, whatever. It's a free site if you go in there. But anyway, look up the trailer that Bill was talking about for Red Shirt. And the funny thing is, my son Chris does not scare easily. This is a kid that when he was 7 years old, he'd go down to the basement by himself to kill the switch back on when our kill switch would go out. Well, he was a film student, and I really was impressed with what Bill did, so I emailed it to him. Well, you know, I wasn't thinking. He's in this creepy dorm room at 1 o'clock in the morning in Las Vegas at UNLV, and I sent it to him, and then he Skyped me 2 seconds later going, "Woman, what in the world did you send me?" He's like, "This just bugged me out. I'm going to have to go find someone to sleep in my room because of the character that you created." So talking about actors being able to create a character, Bill, what dark place did you go to for that?
Literally, he just came out. I wanted to show frantic. I wanted to show, like, a nervous, twitchy frantic. And I wanted to scare the crap out of people. So I started, she said action, and I went with it. And she gave me some amazing direction, and I went with it. I tried one thing, it wasn't working. I tried what she said, and instantly we both knew that this was, like, a super creep. And we shot the rest. It was Tiff's, additional direction that got me there. We shot the rest of it, put it up, and, you know, hey, the rest is history. It got me out to L.A. So that character, you know, 1,200 hits on our film space, and I don't know.
That's huge.
That's huge. I don't know how many other hits on others. Literally hundreds of people sending me emails and notes and messages as to, when is this film coming out? When are you shooting this film?
Mm-hmm.
I finally said, you know, maybe I ought to write a script. So.
I'm telling you, because one of the things that got me, and I'm, you know, a lot of my buddies listening to me out there know I'm not claustrophobic by any means of the imagination. You know, I've had to deal with the gas mask and the ninja mask and the baklava and all that stuff when we're out there shooting and stuff. So, and the Burma and all this other stuff. That doesn't faze me. There's one part in that trailer where he actually films. And explain to me, because you know what shot I'm talking about.
Oh, where I reach at the camera?
Yes, and the camera is actually like giving you the point of view of the person behind the burlap.
Yes, the camera's the victim. I get really nervous. I get up in your face. I crunch down. The lighting, we put one single light up overhead that casts really freaky shadows on my face. You cannot see my eyes, but you can see my facial expressions, and it tends to creep people out. Many of the women that commented, and people have to comment. They watch this and they feel they have to leave a comment. That
yes.
When you drink, when you can pull that kind of a response out of somebody, that's an emotion. You need to do something with that. So a lot of the women would go, "I can't see your eyes. It's unnerving me. I need to see your eyes." In that spot, I reach up and I grab the camera and I lift it, like make it look at my face, like, "Pay attention. You have to pay attention."
Oh, my God. That voice still bugs me out to this day, by the way. And the thing that gets me is because I'm big on, you know, I'm really big on this because I've helped out on the other side, you know, with the camera, and I'm a freak on angles and stuff because I love photography and love the impression that you can give from angle shots and stuff. But I tell you, when you have that freaking camera looking at you as if that was the victim and you have that burlap in front, it was almost like I kept trying to reach up for my face to take the burlap off. Like, I can't breathe, take this off. It was such an amazing, I've never seen that done before.
The burlap sack over your face, that was Tiffany's idea, and boy, did it work.
Oh, yeah, it worked. It bugged me out. Like I said, I'm not claustrophobic, not shy by any means of imagination, but when that shot came and the way you guys edited it, where it was like all of a sudden, there it is, I'm like, it's amazing, and I'm really looking forward to when you do Zoom. So your next project, will that be the next project you're going to be working on?
Well, I'm working with John Seymour from the Main Studios, and he's working on a, what's it called, like a battle plan to either get Red Shirt or the cloning up and running. He wants to be a part of those two films, and he wants to get them made. He really believes in the script. I took the entire script and made it at that same frantic type of pace that you see in that 3 or 4 minute, test audition. It's called Audition, by the way. It's Red Shirt Audition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called ODD. instead of AUDI, it's ODD, Audition, Red Shirt, just because my wife's funny. And John Seymour's working on... John Seymour's trying to get things together and help me get things together to shoot Red Shirt this fall. I have an amazing, stellar lead cast lined up. The film is not fully cast yet. There are still some cast members to be put into the film. So when we do, we will have a casting call for that. But I have...
And make sure you email me this time. This is the funny thing. I have to throw this out. It was so funny because Bill kept saying to me, oh, yeah, we're going to have a casting call for Scooter Magruder. I'll let you know. Go figure. It was me, Shelley, and I forget, was it Tim? Was the other one? There was three of us that are, like, up Bill's butt all the time. We're, like, in his close circle. We totally missed the audition date. We're like, how in the world did that happen? So this time we're, like, basically you're going to have him on speed dial. Make sure you let us know about the auditions. Now,
I'm better about that now because now I have a calendar that I use online, and the calendar reminds me to do things, and I'm getting better at that. I was a little crazy there for a while, but things are getting...
Oh, I can imagine with your first project out the gate, it has to be. Now, the cloning, give us a little synopsis. What is the cloning about?
You know what? I'm going to share with you something that I haven't shared with anybody. The cloning is a very top secret project. I have real directors interested in this project.
What do you mean real directors? Like, you're not a real director.
I'm not a director. I'm an actor. I have some directors that have directed and sold and distributed films worldwide. They're very interested in this project. And this idea came to me in the kitchen with my son. My son is a large part of my life, Benjamin. He's 17. He has presence that you cannot fathom when you see Scooter.
Oh, yeah. Amazing kid.
And when you see Scooter, you'll understand this kid will literally run roughshod over you in a scene. He's so immensely talented, it's disgusting. But we were in the kitchen one night, and I was talking. We were talking about, Dad, let's make a sci-fi. So we're thinking sci-fi, and we're thinking thriller. So here's the synopsis. You ready, people? You ready, America?
I'm excited, yes.
Here it comes. Dr. George Henry Lusk has it all. The perfect job. He's a genetic engineer. The perfect wife. She's beautiful, loving, adoring, and adored. He has everything in life that he could ever ask for. He wins an award for his research in accelerated growth. And he goes to the award ceremony, has a little too much to drink, and decides to drive home. Well, he has a car accident. His wife dies. He blames himself. So he vows to bring his wife back. And he tries to clone her. And that's when it gets interesting. So... I can't tell you any more than that.
Oh, wow. I like.
The part, the part that will drop your jaw, I cannot discuss yet. I have signed contracts and things, so that's not even, that's just the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg for this trailer, for this film. It's an amazing project. I cannot wait to sink my teeth into it. I'll be playing a character that I've never really played before, so it'll be fun and challenging. And we will be casting for that. That is wide open as far as the cast goes. We don't really have anyone solidified as yet. We do have a trailer for it, and some of the folks in the trailer may end up in the feature film, but we are going to have a casting call either way.
See, that's amazing to me because those are the kind of projects that I get so excited about because that's the kind of films that I love to get involved with. And I have to put you on the spot, probably embarrass you a little bit. I'm very picky about who I work with. You know what I mean? There's one thing when you're working, let's say you get cast to be a background in a movie like Edge of Darkness or whatever. That's a little bit different. You know, you're there to craft to perfect your craft, to get your feet wet, to know what's going on, and you're getting paid. But when it comes to an independent project, that's more of a labor of love. And I'm very picky about who I work with. And I have to honestly tell you, and for our listeners that are out there, if any of you are looking to be getting into acting, look Bill up on www.freighttrainfilms.com. And if you go to the future projects link, you'll see some of the stuff that he's talking about. This is the kind of person you want to work with. Because honestly, one of the things that I have to say about Bill, and as a person, he's just amazing. You know, honest, the integrity's there, the family value. And I think that's why you wind up with these great, amazing actors that are willing to drive long distances for you, because there's such a family feel to working with you. And the fact that you have a knack for being able to bring out the best in people to be able to create this character. And I really personally want to really thank you for having allowed me into that inner circle, because I feel very honored and privileged to be there and to be able to be there to see you from the ground level up. It's just an honor to do that.
Wow, you're going to make me cry. Stop.
No. I have to tell you, and honestly, I'll even share a little story. The day that you had called us, me and Shelley, we happened to be up in Maine because we were working with Ahurzi, a friend of Bill that he's done some projects with. And we had been doing filming all day Saturday, the day before, and I usually crash at Z's place on that. And I'll tell you, I woke up with the worst migraine ever. I mean, like throwing up, dizzy, the whole bit. And Z even said to me, he's like, you really want to still go up there? And honestly, anybody else, I would have said, no, I'll give him a call and that's it. Couldn't do it with you, Bill. I couldn't, because I had given my word, and I know it wasn't a major role. It wasn't anything that couldn't be replaced. But there was just that semblance of kind of like when you make a promise to a family member and you're going to let them down, and that's just kind of the environment. So any of our listeners, I have to tell you, this is the person you want to work with, because he's definitely going to do right by you. And trust me, you are going to get 10 times more of whatever effort or time or energy you put into his projects. Bill, I cannot believe the time flies by so much when we're together.
It just blows
my mind. I'm going to have you back before the film festival. So for our listeners, Bill, give us some information. So we have www.freighttrainfilms.com. That has a lot of great information. It has information on Scooter Magruder, future projects, acting clips. It has pictures of the set, store, actors page, and contact information as well. Give us any other websites that you'd like to have our listeners know about.
Yes, actually, thank you for saying that. I just landed a role in a zombie, which I've been dying to get into a zombie film forever.
That is so awesome. I'm hating right now in a good way.
I love you. I landed a role in a zombie film with the amazingly talented the King, Jason Crow. He's star of Dead Moon Rising, a zombie mm-hmm. that came out a couple years ago, an independent zombie that actually went worldwide, so it's one of the big shots. He was in Fangoria Magazine and several others. Jason Crow called me and his other half, Ronnie Jonah, they called
mm-hmm.
me up and said, Bill, we want you in this film. They wrote a character specifically for me in the film. And this zombie is, I've read the script, it's twice as funny as Dead Moon Rising. And Dead Moon Rising is a very funny film. Well, the reason I'm telling you about this is they are looking for a zombie. You can go to the site. It's on my Facebook page if you're looking for the link. I'm sorry, I'm not near my computer, but if you go to my page on Facebook, you can pull up the link, Charlie, and it says
mm-hmm.
The Zombie Movie, TZM, The Zombie Movie, and there's a thing where it's a contest. You make yourself up to look like a zombie, send your headshot in, and if you get more votes than anybody else from your friends or whatnot, they will put you in the film. Not only will they put you in the film, they will let you kill one of the main characters as a zombie. So it's so awesome. Yeah. So you get a chance to work with the amazingly talented Jason Crow, Ronnie Jonah, some other incredibly talented actors and actresses. I think I'm in there somewhere. But don't hold that against them. You should definitely get into
this. Don't even go there. Are you kidding me? You're right up there with these people.
But if you've got, I think, 10 days to upload and get all your friends to vote, and they're serious. Whoever gets the most votes will be featured in this film as a zombie and get to eat one of the main characters. So it's your chance, folks, to be in a zombie. It's called The Zombie Movie, and it's by Feathered Italian Films, Jason Crow, Ronnie Jonah, and a couple other companies. So.
Yeah, you know, and this is the cool thing. So, guys, go to Bill McLean's page on Facebook. The link will be there and get the information. How cool is that? You get to play zombie. You get to put your picture up there, have your friends vote for you, and if you get picked, you actually get to kill and eat one of the main characters. How cool is that? Tell me this isn't, like, the best industry in the world where you can actually make all your fantasies come through. And it's funny because Andy's kind of like me, we love zombies if they're done right and they never get old. And I think the new movie, the new series, The Walking Dead, kind of brought all that back for people, made them realize that zombies don't have to be as cheesy as we think they can be sometimes. Andy's funny. He's like, great! Bill, thank you so much for being with us. I love the fact that you got to share all this information with us. So listeners, remember, the www.lafilmfestival.org. Get all the information. Saturday, April 2nd at 1:15, if I'm correct, Bill?
Yes, ma'am. He said he's going to put the official stuff up soon, but that's what they told me, and so far it hasn't changed.
Saturday, April 2nd at 1:15, you'll be able to see Scooter Magruder, and it's international, I would say, because there's international films there, and it's worldwide premiere. This is the first time it's going to be premiered for the general public, and they'll get to see it. Hopefully, we'll have a red carpet somewhere after that, Bill?
Yes, we're working on that feverishly right now. We hope that 1 or 2 weeks after that, we will have a red carpet premiere, and everyone that was in the film will be able to go off the red carpet and get interviewed, pictures, and whatnot.
That is so cool.
Wow.
I get to walk a red carpet. Jesus. So, guys, remember, go check it out and support him. I actually, believe it or not, Bill, it's so funny. I don't know how I wind up doing this, but I called, I emailed to get some information and wind up volunteering for the film festival, so I'll be up there. I'm going up there Friday. Yeah, I did. I wind up being a volunteer. Whatever. You know me. I'm always sticking my nose everywhere. So I'll be up there Friday night for the training. I'll probably be crashing with somebody, with Shelly, and then we'll head up there for the thing on Saturday. Bill, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, hey, thank you. You're amazing. Thank you so much for having me on. You better call me because you're going to get a big fat hug when I see you.
Oh, absolutely. And we definitely going to have you back to give us more information before April 2nd, just to make sure you keep us abreast of what's going on. And shout-outs, any greetings to anybody out there?
Yep, I got more film stuff to share. So, yeah, I'll come back. I'd love to.
Awesome. That sounds excellent. So we'll definitely have you back before then. Thank you so much, Bill. And it's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Charlie. Love you.
Love you too, honey. So for you guys, tell me that was not one of the most amazing interviews. I mean, I absolutely love having this guy, and he is just so talented and has so much to offer as a person. So if you guys are ever interested in getting some acting done, www.freighttrainfilms.com, best way to get your feet wet. Trust you. Trust me, you can't go wrong. Also, if you happen to be up in Maine on April 2nd for the Lewiston Auburn LA Film Festival, go up there, guys. You won't regret it. There's going to be some great films up there, and you can get to meet Bill and some of the cast that's going to be there. I'll be there as well, hanging out, looking forward to the red carpet premiere that we'll get to walk pretty soon. Real quick, before I say goodbye to you guys, because I'm so excited, I have to share some incredible news. Mountain Man, did you unmute yourself?
No, I didn't unmute myself.
Mute yourself, my man. Anyway, I have some amazing news to share. I went to an audition last week for a movie that's coming into Massachusetts called Bring the Boom, Kevin James, and I just got notified that I got picked to be one of the core backgrounds, which basically means there's a lot of scenes that are being filmed in the classroom, and I actually get to be one of the main people in the classroom. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But I'm kind of excited. This is going to be my first featured background role, which basically means I'm a featured extra. So you actually get to see me. You won't have to, you know, pause the thing. So we'll see how that works out. But I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to working with Kevin James again. amazing person. I had so much fun working with him on the Grown Ups and Mall Cop. And we also worked with him on The Zookeeper. So it was kind of cool when I walked in, saw the same director and the same people. It's kind of cool when people know your name. It makes you feel welcome. Not that I'm that big of a star or anything, but it's fun to be able to work with people that I know. So, guys, thank you so much to everybody in the chat room. And, Andy, I will eternally love you for letting me know about The Walking Dead. Otherwise, never would have heard of it. Andy actually let me in on it the day it started. So excited. Jocelyn,
wow.
Thank you very much for being there. Real quick in Spanish. Jocelyn, gracias por estar. Y Ginny, si todavía está escuchando, saludos. Y espero que todos estén bien y que Dios te bendiga. Ojalá que venga de nuevo. Just saying greetings to my sister in Costa Rica. Starlight, William, Sierra, Rosemary, Mary. Infamous Angel, guest 19088, Gary, Bob, Betty, Andy. And did I miss anybody else? Mark, are you still there? William and Wendy. Mark, I think, had to cut out. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us. So glad that you were able to be with us. Remember, next week, 7 to 9 p.m., we'll be back, Eastern Standard Time. Do not forget to come and join us. Also, we'll get to those emails that I talked about. If you have any questions, that concerns, or any guests that you think would be great, make sure you email us, ordinarywomanwmn@gmail.com, wmn@gmail.com. So, guys, with that, have a great evening and have a great weekend. For those of you that are going out on St. Patty's Day, do not get in trouble. Keep it down to a few couple beers. Not too many. Not too many. All right, guys, remember, anything is possible. Nothing is impossible to the willing heart, and do not let anybody ever, ever, ever steal your dreams away. And with that, we'll leave you out with a little feel from Laz and Kat.
Yeah, Laz Ritz, Kata B, Miss Smith and Envy, for the little 9, y'all, yeah, check this out, yeah, Triceptus Studio, check it, yeah, yeah. Yo, chillin' in the club, toastin' it up, having some fun, just enjoying the love. I saw you walking by looking all upset. That was a cue for me, just the end of the set. To take you from your low, bring you to your high. Tell you positive things like how you so fly. After the club, meet me at the ride. We'll go to the beach, count the stars in the sky. In the meantime, tell me about your nine. You're the finest thing that's dressing all wide. Clothes you got on is a major turn on. Me looking at your mind is an instant all on. Yeah, God, it's the way how you touching me. Sending me a vibe right through my body. You're so attractive and I'm so addictive. Yeah, that's something different, I'm dying to get with it.
Ooh, I like the way you always pushing on me. Ooh, I like the way you put yours on my body. Ooh, I like the way you always on my mind. Ooh, I like the way how you do it every time. Ooh, ha, ha, ooh, ha, ha, ooh.
Prime time player, used to chew girls up like now and later. Used to have 10 shorties all up in the jet.